You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Alex is slow to get up. Here's Kyoto now. The Dynamo need Romel Kyoto. It's a good ball inside. The notice. Oh, clips of beauty over the top. Kyoto! It's going to go away. The Dynamo are back in it. Romel Kyoto for Mauro Manotas. It is now 2-1. The Honduran has brought the Dynamo back to life here in the second half.
Good in front. The referee says no free kick and a chance to break here as the ball's played forward for Aubameyang. He's got the pace to get in behind. Castro had made the run and Aubameyang held on to it just a fraction too long. Pulisic at the edge of the box. Tries to find the yard. What a hit!
Got a minute.
Goal on opening day. Dortmund lead by a goal to nil.
All right, we come back. Boy, how exciting is it to be an American fan with Christian Pulisic doing it at that level in Germany for Dortmund? Quickly to the phone lines to Josh. Josh, what's on your mind real quick?
Hey, Glenn. Yeah, I just wanted to call because I heard you calling out the Dynamo fans, so I couldn't wait, so I just had to call you about it.
That a boy. I like that. Yeah. I like that. Stepping up to the plate. You're bold. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. No, I really agree with what Manny was saying about the forward three that we need to have. You know, it needs to be – I would love to see Kyoto, Mauro, and Elise again up top. I think Mauro and Kyoto playing together was just great. I loved Mauro's ball to Kyoto. That was incredible.
Yeah, that was a great goal. I have some thoughts on it. I think it was an important goal for Kyoto from a confidence perspective. The only thing is I think he needs to balance his game with taking people wide and trying to turn the corner on him. I love the element that he comes inside. I do recognize that he's right footed, so that the tendency is there to do that. But I also think the Dynamo have to penetrate and have to get wide, especially that night against Vancouver with those two big center backs who were just gobbling everything up in the air. You have to beat an outside back in order to pull those guys out of the middle. And I think that's going to be vital against FC Dallas, with Matt Hedges in there and their center back pairing. I'm trying to remember the other center back's name who has done so well for them, has been injured, hasn't found his form.
Walker Zimmerman.
Thank you very much. Yeah. See, that's why I got the best callers on this show. They're up on it. So we'll see. But, you know.
I'm still worried because, you know, we're going to be without AJ and we're going to be without Cabezas. So, and the way Boniak was playing this last game, it's going to be awful to see him on the pitch again starting.
Well, he's a veteran. Hopefully he's going to bounce back from that. It wasn't a great night for Oscar. I don't think there's any question. I mean, it was a tackle he never should have got into. He didn't need to. And that's the last guy, you know, when you go to Vancouver with that experience that, you know, you're not expecting that to happen from him. So we'll see. I mean, he could be an option at right back. He could be an option in midfield. We'll see. But I think there's a lot to debate here. And by the way, Dynamo fans, as I let Josh go, 713-780-3776, let's begin to debate what should be the starting lineup against FC Dallas tomorrow night. And to talk more about FC Dallas is my television partner, good friend, most importantly, and a former Dynamo defender, Eddie Robinson. He joins us now. Eddie, how are you?
What's up, Glenn?
Well, we got some good talk going on potential lineups for the Dynamo. But before we get to that today, you as an A-plus hamburger aficionado, I want you to know today that I had grilled a burger at home today. But what I did was, and it was 100% organic beef, but I had hatch chili, mild, cooked hatch chili I put on top of it. And it was freaking spectacular. Now my one-bedroom apartment smells like a hamburger joint now.
That's okay, Glenn. That's okay. There are very, very notable, well-known burger joints that do hatch chili burger specials. So the Houston burger community loves that. You did very well. I hope it tastes good as it sounded.
Oh, it was good. I wish I had another one. And the other thing is my dog is walking around with her nose up in the air all over the apartment because it can't get enough of the... Yeah, I had to get out of there tonight. I had to burn a couple of candles and use a little spray. All right, let's get into the Dynamo. Starting lineup, there are real challenges here for Wilmer Cabrera. So let's first, Let's start at the back, the right back position. A.J. De La Garza is out with yellow cards. Who do you play there? Dylan Remick, Ani Baba, Boniek Garcia. Who would you play there?
I would talk to him if Emily Nicobe. I'd talk to him. I would like to keep our center backs the same, and I would like to play DeMarcus Beasley and Dylan Remick as our two outside backs. And I would ask DeMarcus, do you feel comfortable with your veteran leadership as long as you've been in this game? Can you play right back and let Dylan play left back? He's a younger kid. That's where he's played. Dylan Remick has confidence there. That's the most important thing. I think DeMarcus Beasley, you can pretty much put him in any position on the field, and he'll be confident that he can play there. So I don't think it would be bad to put him at right back. I think Dylan Remick, his confidence should be fairly high because he's done such a good job when he's filled in for DeMarcus. So that would be my choice. Obviously, okay. There are so many decisions or conversations going on behind the scenes.
But I want your choice. I'm not worried about the conversations. I want your choice because you're the analyst, and I'm putting you in that place.
Beasley at right back, Remick at left back.
There you go. So there it is.
That's what I would choose.
Okay, I like that. And I agree with you 100%. I think Dylan Remick has been a wonderful signing and is – played at a high level whenever he's been called upon. Let's go into midfield. You're going to lose Juan David Cabezas, who, quite frankly, I hope the Dynamo are putting it in the works to make sure this guy comes back next year. But he's not available. I think the straight swap there is Ricardo Clark. You would expect Alex to be there. So who's the third midfielder?
I would like to see Memo Rodriguez. The academy product, I think that Nimmo's done everything in his power to take advantage of the opportunities he's been given to play and show Wilmer Cabrera he deserves another opportunity. I think that your previous caller, was it Josh, your last caller?
Josh.
Josh, I agree with him. Boniek had a rough game. And I think Memo Rodriguez has proven that he deserves a chance. So I would love to see Ricardo Clark and tell him, look, you're sitting tonight. You don't need to go forward. You sit back, let Alex join, let Memo join. Because the one thing you can be guaranteed of is that Memo's going to do the work on the defensive side of the ball. He's going to bust his tail. And technically, we haven't gotten to see him enough. I don't think Tomas Martinez is fit enough to go 90. I would expect to see him as a sub again. I would like to see him as a sub again in the second half. But I would give Memo Rodriguez the start alongside Alex Moreno.
By the way, we're on Facebook Live. Our studio line number here to call in to talk with Eddie and I, 713-780-3776 is the number. 713-780-3776 is the number to call in here tonight. Okay, now, we were told that Ricardo Clark, and I think this makes a lot of sense, and this does seem right up Wilmer Cabrera's alley. We were told Ricardo Clark, Vicente Sanchez, and Kubo Torres were left home because of the rotation policy to be rested. So I'm assuming that means Kubo goes back into the starting lineup. Rico's going to go back into the starting lineup. What do you do with the front three? Because there are questions. Because I look at Kyoto and I go, boy, he got a very important goal for him confidence-wise. He hasn't scored since May. At least two games ago before getting the yellow cards. Very important goal for Albert Elise. We need these two Hondurans in the future here if you're going to go far, because they have defined the way the Dynamo play. So, but then we also know, Eddie, you and I know that on the road, Wilmer Cabrera has been using Andrew Wenger. Most of Wenger's starts come on the road because of his defensive capability. So what do you do up front?
Well, I mean, yeah, a lot of credit to Andrew Wenger because of his responsibility. He never shies away from that. That's a fantastic question. I think that, again, and I'll go back to your last caller, Josh, I would love to see Kyoto, Elise, and Marvin Otis across the front. The pace, the understanding, I mean, these are things that these guys have in droves, and I would love to see, again, Wilmer Cabrera, and this doesn't happen on the road, but hopefully at some point it does, Intel. That front three and maybe Alex Lima, go for it.
Three, you know, I'm trying to sit here and think, Eddie, do you remember the last time Elise and Kyoto started together? I think it's been quite some time. And my only thought on that is that defensively.
We got a Victor there tonight?
Yeah, he's looking at it.
Victor? Yeah, right.
I think it's been a long time.
Maybe it was Portland. Was it Portland?
On the road? Well, that's way back. That's got to be back in April or May. So let's get back on. Let me get you back on topic here. So more thoughts on the front three. I like where you're going and where Josh is going because that's all out attack. Do you think the Dynamo against the team that's lost 3 and 4 should come out, press from the start, try and catch Dallas early, catch them cold, get the game's first goal and see if that preys on their mind?
100 million percent. Absolutely. The Dynamo haven't done that on the road. And again, if Ricardo Clark, if you tell him, you give him the instruction, stay home. Just stay home. We know that our outside forwards, whether it's Kyoto's winger, or maybe even it's Marmonotis, Alvin Police, whoever it is, I'm telling them to go forward. I'm not telling them to defend. So you're going to have to balance from side to side. If an outside back comes forward in a counterattack, you're going to have to get out there. Get out there. Nemo, if Rico goes, drop in front of the back four, and then let the front four do whatever they want. I think Dynamo are going to be fine. But if Ricardo Clark isn't very disciplined, if Nemo Rodriguez isn't extremely disciplined, Dynamo are going to be facing a lot of crosses, a lot of things, a lot of attack, a lot of counterattacks. But I would love to see them go out and high press and use their pace and their power and try to get some counterattacks going and get an early goal. Because as you mentioned, Dallas is struggling right now.
By the way, Eddie, Victor just slipped me a piece of paper, and this is really funny because when I looked at it, it quickly came to my head that you and I had talked about this is the first time they've been paired together in a long time, and I think it probably goes back to the Portland game. But August 12th, they both played together against San Jose. So
they played together. Did they both start, though?
They started. Yeah, they started against San Jose. Right.
Well, that was the game we didn't do, Glenn. That we were sitting on the sideline.
That's right. That's right. And then, but I remember we were on the field, and I remember coming into the stadium and looking at the starting lineup and going, "Oh, this is exciting for me." But it was at home, so I don't think it's going to happen on the road. I would love to see it happen, but I don't think it will. We got a minute left. Anything else that jumps out to you in this game for the Dynamo against FC Dallas, Eddie?
You know, I'm expecting there's probably going to be a few cards. I want to see some pushing and shoving. I want the referee to let the players push and shove. I mean, not the hands to the face, not the thumbs up tackles, but let these guys enjoy the rivalry. Let the fans enjoy yelling at the opposing players. I want to see the referee have a little bit of discretion based on just the gravity of this rivalry and how old it is and how much these players want to win this game for their fans. Let them push and shove if they need to. Don't get in there. Obviously, if there's hands to the face, if there's anything egregious, take care of it. But don't just go throwing yellow cards around because guys are fired up. That's the one thing I will say.
Well, the referee will play a part in it, like always. And I wanted to get to tackling and the art of tackling, but we'll get to that another night, Eddie. Thank you very much for coming on tonight, and I will see you soon.
It is always a pleasure, Glenn. I will see you shortly.
All right. That's Eddie Robinson joining us here. Good thoughts there on the Dynamo against FC Dallas. We're going to take a break here. Just a reminder, Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. John Daspit, huge supporters of this show. Bud Light, huge supporters of this show. We thank you so much. The Gorgeous Gale, we also thank you for your great support. Also, Azure Salon, that's where you get your haircut, guys. Ladies, they've got you covered. Color, styles, it's all there. Azure Salon in the West App shopping area. Get over there. They take care of me. They make me look good for TV work, which, by the way, making me look good is a bit of a challenge. Ladies, they got you covered. Color, cuts, and extensions. AzureSalon.com. All right, more to come here. Paul Tenorio of 442. Steve Davis of 442. We're going to talk promotion, relegation, TAM, and haves and have-nots in Major League Soccer.
ESPN 97.5. You You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
We continue to roll on here tonight, and I've got two of my favorite writers on this program. Before we get to this gentleman, let's do a quick moment here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Now, John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com. The number is 713-322-HURT. 713-322-HURT. Bilingual, by the way. Now, look, we're not wishing accidents upon anybody, but when you get in one, you sometimes need legal help. Whether your accident is car, boat, motorcycle, industrial, construction, in Houston, plant, refinery, you might drive an 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm is going to assure you they'll treat your case as if it's their own. Again, it's DaspitLaw.com. They're going to work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. They're going to fight for your right for compensation. Do it with the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-4878. And with that, we bring in from 442 Magazine. He's also the sideline reporter for the Chicago Fire. You might remember him from his time down in Orlando. Paul Tenorio joins us now. Paul, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. So I'm looking at you, and I'm looking at you as I've always liked your writing. I like your choices of topics. It's challenging. It's probing. It's the kind of healthy pressure we need. You went from the Orlando market and saw that launch to the Chicago market now. You're also, for my listeners, doing sideline reporting for the Chicago Fire, a completely different job. But from the writing perspective, where are we as a league when it comes to healthy pressure in markets?
Well, I think it varies from market to market. You can be in one market and see the way that the mass media approaches MLS, and it's strong. And I would say that probably the best up there in MLS right now is Toronto's market. And then you can go to a market like the one I'm in right now in Chicago and see that, you know, they don't get covered by the biggest outlets here in the city. You know, the Chicago Tribune, they may write a feature here and there, but there's not day-to-day coverage that really holds people accountable to the degrees that we're used to, in the NFL or NBA or Major League Baseball. And, you know, I think on the whole, MLS still has a long way to go to getting that relevance within its markets, to having that market penetration, even in a market like, for example, Los Angeles. And I think Angel Hernandez, the sports editor of the LA Times, has done a fantastic job in his decisions with coverage for soccer, increasing the coverage for soccer in LA. Angel Rodriguez. But even when you go to the LA Times website, there's still not a tab there for the LA Galaxy or for LAFC. So, you know, and when you walk around downtown LA, there is not that penetration within the market that you see for the other professional teams there. So there's still a long way to go if you're Major League Soccer to grow overall in market to market. And I think that's a reason why they've committed so many resources to building up MLS Digital and MLSsoccer.com to try to supplement where the league still lacks that coverage. But hopefully as the league continues to grow, we'll see more and more resources devoted to it. And I also think as editors grow younger and come from different demographics like Angel in LA, we'll see, you know, more and more newspapers start to recognize that people do care about the sport and do care about Major League Soccer, and we'll see decisions change.
I've said that, though, for 8 to 10 years, that once people get in the positions of sports editors that have an affinity, have an understanding of the sport of soccer, things could change, and I don't really see it changing. Places like Houston, places like Chicago, that's not getting the mainstream coverage. And by the way, this show that you're on, this is the best mainstream coverage that Houston has, because we are on ESPN radio here. We're on it, you know, between 7 and 9. So it's the best mainstream coverage we have. Nobody touches it in any other hours of the day. And the Dynamo don't have stories during the week. So who's accountable for this? Is it the clubs? Because I have to think it's the clubs who've got to nurture the relationships and move this forward in the mainstream.
Well, I think it depends on what we're talking about. I mean, for newspapers, it's been an industry that has changed dramatically since I entered the business 10 years ago at the Washington Post. I mean, I got hired at the Post in September of 2007, and within 2 weeks, I was seeing my first farewell emails from staffers that had taken buyouts. And those emails continued during all 5 of my years at the Washington Post. And that was just an indication of the way that coverage, the way that newspapers have changed over the last.
Got it. We got the newspaper going downward. What about television?
I think there's a multiple ways to approach it. I think certainly there's an obligation within the club to share stories, to foster relationships, and I think also there's a responsibility within the league to be more transparent, to be more open to media coverage. I mean, I remember being in Orlando and going to a practice session, and an anchor from the local TV station wanted to interview a player who was not a massive name in MLS. Not like he was asking for Kaká, and he was told by the club that he hadn't given them 24 hours notice to interview said player, and so now it was going to be more of a headache to bring that player over. That's ridiculous. And as he rightly pointed out, when Dwight Howard was in Orlando, he could go into the locker room every single day and interview Dwight Howard on camera. And he shouldn't be fighting to interview a name that 75% of the people in his market don't even know. And that responsibility falls on the league.
On the club, too.
It also falls on the team.
You used the word, Paul, transparency. So this is interesting. We got Paul Tenorio of 442. This is a great interview. You use transparency. And we just saw something happen in Seattle, and it's reported in the Seattle Times that Jovan Jones has left early to go to Trinidad and Tobago. Garth Lagerwey is quoted in the article, I think, saying he had personal reasons, right? But he's leaving before the international window. He's going to miss two games. But this is out front, and it's in the paper. A lot of markets will sweep this stuff underground and hope nobody thinks about it.
No, I agree. I agree. And I think Seattle, for me, has one of the most progressive and smart media relations teams of any in MLS. I voted them as the top media relations team last year. And every team I've spoken with, I've recommended that they pick up the phone and call Alex Caulfield in Seattle because he gets it. He's willing to go to battle with anyone in that club over something he believes should be in the news. And he understands why it's valuable to have good news and bad news in media outlets. You have to generate conversation and buzz around these teams. And that's the way it goes. Look, no matter what sport you cover, there are going to be things that teams try to prevent you from writing about. I mean, when I was covering UCF football before I covered Orlando City, but down in Orlando, you know, George O'Leary used to get angry with me all the time over stuff that I reported about his team. When I was at the Washington Post helping out on Washington Redskins coverage, it was a constant battle with the Redskins to be able to get sources that would tell you the stuff that the club doesn't want you to know. But I think on a very basic level, there's more information that MLS can put out there. And I'll give you an example. They talked about the transparency of allocation money being announced in trades and all of this and all of that. And we all went crazy
at the MLS Super Draft, right? Because we got a few numbers.
And then Dom Dwyer is traded to Orlando City, and they announced that it's $900,000 up front plus $600,000 in bonuses. And yet they won't tell us the split of targeted allocation money and general allocation money. And how many years is this money spread out? Is it over 1 year? Is it over 2 years? Is it over 3 years? Nobody knows. So it's not really that much transparency. We still have to have all these caveats when we talk about the Dom Dwyer trade, because there is a difference in value between TAM and GAM. There is a difference between if it's 1 year and 2 years. And the league would not supply that information. I was able to get some of it from sources, but that's the frustration that's still there, where I don't think the league or the teams understand that's how you create buzz when your teams aren't on the field. And you can't grow a sport simply within the 90 minutes that teams are playing soccer. There has to be more narrative-driving stories than that.
Yeah, I'm waiting here in Houston, and I'll tell you what, Paul, I love what you're saying here, and I also appreciate all the digging that you have to do when you follow up stories like that on TAM and GAM, and you're not getting a lot of help. So I really appreciate what you're doing and the writers that are doing that, and I think we do have a base of great writers now that are really up and coming that are going to get after it. But, you know, I'm looking for a bust up in practice once in a while. You know, the locker room can't be beautiful all the time. I want reality, and I think people want the transparency of the reality, and I think you can find the balance of that without losing the protection of your team and your teammates and all those other things. All right, I move on. You mentioned TAM. Next year there's supposed to be more TAM distributed to the teams in Major League Soccer. Whether they take advantage of that or not, who knows? But is that going to be something to you that's going to be telling as to who are the teams really going for it and who are the teams sort of just kind of staying status quo?
For sure. I think the league is reaching many of these points, and my last two columns talk about it. The first is what I wrote last week about TAM, about this potential $800,000 that would be discretionary, where owners could opt to buy that extra $800,000 the same way they can opt to buy a third designated player spot right now. And also, I wrote this week about the charter flights and whether or not owners that are willing to pay for those flights will get a chance to do so. This is the moment that I think we're seeing a portion of ownership's groups that are ready to spend more, willing to spend more, start to either A, gain separation in the league because they get this stuff passed and the other owners don't change, or B, that the league becomes a better league because more ownership groups commit to spending that money, whether it's ownership groups in Colorado or New England that we know have the money and simply don't spend it, or whether it's some of the smaller ownership groups that have less financial backing of an Arthur Blank, for example, a billionaire. But you look at Sporting Kansas City or Columbus, some of the smaller Houston, some of the smaller market teams that maybe can't spend at those levels, but still say, you know what? Yes, that extra $800,000 to go buy one or two more impact players is worth it. And yes, the extra $1 million a year investment to fly privately so that our athletes are 100% when they're on the road and 100% when they come home because they don't have to sit in an airport for 3 hours. That's worth it. That's worth it because it puts a better product on the field. And if we put a better product on the field, we'll gain more fans and we'll improve as a league and we'll compete with some of the better leagues out there, including Liga MX. These are things that are happening right now that are potentially drastically changing this league. And, you know, I'm rooting for that extra $800,000 to come in, whether it's, you know, a mandatory $800,000, but also if it's discretionary, because I do think it adds an element of pressure that doesn't exist as highly as it could in this league yet, so that fans can hold ownership groups accountable, fans can hold GMs accountable, and yeah, fans can hold coaches accountable to a new level.
We need that to go to the next level. Consequence? Would that word go also with the healthy pressure? Consequence?
Of course. Of inaction? I think we're seeing that. You know, I think we're finally seeing that in MLS to an extent. I thought that this secondary window was an example where we're seeing GMs finally making desperation moves, desperation trades. You know, Orlando City spending way too much money for Dom Dwyer.
Yeah.
DC United spending way too much money for Paul Arriola. Why? Because they had to get a deal done. Because fans are growing smarter and they have choices globally to watch this sport that doesn't involve buying a ticket and going to the stadium. And not only that, but they have teams within their league that are giving fans those incentives to come watch. You have an Atlanta spending $8.5 million on Miguel Almiron, right? So there is pressure that's introduced, and that's why I also think you see a Pablo Mastroeni fired for not producing an attacking team that's entertaining to watch, that's worth coming to see. And this is something I think has been missing from MLS, and I hope that these are signs that it is growing up a little bit, that the league is maturing, and that we're finally starting to see some ownership groups that are investing more money saying, you know what, I'm paying millions of dollars more than I was 10 years ago, I want results, and that's ultimately what it's going to come down to.
Paul Tenorio, 442 Magazine, joining us here. This is really good stuff. All right, so the notion of promotion and relegation only within MLS has come up in a number of places. So in other words, there would be a division with half the teams that are MLS 1 and a division that would be MLS 2. Is that something that you think could work, and would that be something that you would be interested in? In other words, if there's 10 teams in the bottom or 12 teams in the bottom MLS 2, three of those after a season would get promoted. Is it something you think is a possibility?
You know, maybe down the road I could see it as a possibility if MLS continues to expand, and I would not be shocked if this league ends up at 32 teams and you see maybe a split like that of 16 and 16. Somewhere down the road, there'd have to be some kind of financial protection. But honestly, if American soccer is going to move towards promotion and relegation, you know, it doesn't make sense to have a closed promotion relegation system within MLS only. The problem is I just don't see a future in which there are enough ownership groups that have the money and the financial commitment to the sport to make promotion and relegation work. I saw a team moving from third division USL to first division MLS. I witnessed firsthand everything that goes into making that happen. It was a lot of hiring in the front office behind the scenes. I mean, that staff multiplied by at least triple the number of staff people that needed to be hired, ticket sales and promotion and all of that stuff that had to be hired. They had to move to a new office. Then they had to find a better stadium to play in. They had to build a stadium. Then they were going to spend significantly more on players. They had to find an owner who was willing to spend that money. I think if you look around at the different markets that exist, whether it's the NASL or the USL or NPSL or anything else, PDL, You need to find these ownership groups that are showing, yes, we're willing to commit $10, $20 million a year. We're willing to go build a stadium that could host a real professional team. We're willing to hire players and pay them. You know, I look at the Stockade FC, and I really like Dennis Crowley. I interviewed him for a story about lower division soccer earlier this year, but he doesn't pay his players yet. And he's talking about wanting to be able to be moved up to different divisions. You know, that's another step, another area of increase of spending for
I think people think that just because there's these franchises out there, they think they're ready to be moved up to a higher level. And you're right, they've got to have some real resources in order, number one, to get into Major League Soccer, or if there ever was promotion and relegation, even entertain the idea of moving forward, facilities and all these other things. I guess what I'm getting at with internal promotion and relegation in Major League Soccer is more consequence, another mechanism to stunt people into being more competitive. You know, if you're in MLS 2 as opposed to MLS 1, you know, maybe players aren't as willing to maybe want to come there because you're in the second, you know, sort of division of the league, trying to get up to the top division, and maybe you're playing in certain markets as opposed to the Seattles and the Torontos and the, you know. So I'm just thinking of ideas to stunt the competitive side of it. Now, if we look at the playoff system right now in the West, there's lots of competition and it's working.
Yeah, and I think there are different ways to add consequence. And I think American sports have proved that playoffs do that, that there are there's real legitimate pressure to get into the playoffs. Coaches get fired for not getting to the playoffs. And I think right now, when so many teams are competitive in the league and there are eight playoff spots for a 11 team, or, you know, whatever, six playoff spots for an 11 team conference, you know, more than 50% of the teams get in, maybe that's not enough pressure. But I think as the expansion continues to happen, as long as they leave the playoffs as it stands currently with six teams on each side, and you're looking at 12 teams per division, maybe eventually more than that, where you're looking at 14 teams per division and only six are getting into the playoffs, that creates even more competition, even more consequence, and even more teams that are failing to reach that goal, that are feeling pressure to get there. And I think that is another key moment for MLS when they get to 28 teams, that they make a decision to stay at 12 teams of 28 getting into the playoffs to introduce a higher level of pressure, and probably a little bit more churn and turnover among front office staff within the league.
Paul, great stuff. I got to run. We're up on a hard break here. Tremendous stuff tonight. We would like to have you back on again in the future. Let's keep this discussion going. By the way, keep up all the great work. Enjoy your writings immensely.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. That's 442 Paul Tenorio, also the sideline reporter for the Chicago Fire. Does a great job. One of my favorite reads. Go to 442 and look up Paul Tenorio. Again, our thanks to Paul. Quick break here now. We'll just remind you, an Irish pub with an Irish feel. Gorgeous Gale, 5555 Morningside. Open field, monitors, outdoor patio, thegorgeousgale.com. We'll take a break.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, tonight we wrap it up in style. More talk about the FC Dallas-Houston Dynamo rivalry. We'll get to that in a quick second. Before we do, don't forget, tomorrow night, watch party at King's Court. Soccer fans, King's Court is a real pub in Edo. It's right next to the stadium at 903 Hutchins. It's on the corner of Walker and Hutchins. 13 TVs at King's Court, Premier League matches, Dynamo matches, La Liga, you name it, they have it. 24 taps, full bar, extensive selection of spirits, tremendous pub food down there. Get over to King's Court where I hang out after Dynamo matches. Good bet I'm going to be there tomorrow night, too, for the Dynamo watch party against FC Dallas. Visit the rooftop deck and patio. It sits in the shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium. Go in and say hello to Jay. KingsCourtTX.com. One of my favorite soccer writers, hands down, is Steve Davis, but he's also the color analyst of FC Dallas. So wearing a couple of hats right now, he joins us now. Steve, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Nah, I always like talking soccer with you, Glenn. And by the way, I will be at the stadium tomorrow, but I got to tell you, man, it's going to be hot, and it sure sounds nice and cool. I wouldn't mind being there at the King's Court.
Well, you're always welcome, Steve.
Taking my pick from one of those 24 taps. That sounds great.
You have an open invitation at any time, and I'm sure Jay and El Batallón, the supporters group, would welcome one of the great soccer writers in America with open arms. So let's talk FC Dallas. What's going on? Haven't won a game in four, three losses in four. This is not FC Dallas-like.
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, Glenn, look, we all know it. It's a long season. The slump is out there. And, you know, FC Dallas is going through theirs. Now, how you deal with that, you know, how you come out of it on the other side, do you spin out of it, or do you let it, kind of take hold and do you keep spiraling? That's got to be the question. And I think what's going on lately, Glenn, is it's just kind of a combination of two or three things. You know, sometimes when the offense goes a little stale, which it has, your defense can carry you. You know, maybe you can 1-0 your way through some points, and kind of like Colorado did, you know, all last year. You know, sometimes your defense, you know, gets a little leaky and your back line gets unstable because of injuries and, you know, suspensions or international absences, and that's happened to FC Dallas a little bit. You know, some of the marking on the set pieces the other day was just criminal. You know, so what's happened to Dallas is those two things have happened at the same time. You know, sometimes, as you know, one can cancel out the other one. One can, you know, your offense is clicking. Now you give up a goal, maybe you get two, so that's okay. You give it two goals, maybe you get three. Right now, the offense has just gone stale at a bad time, and at the same time, their back line just isn't what it was earlier this year.
So in the last game against Sporting Kansas City, from an attacking standpoint, Steve, did they create enough chances for you?
Considering this is relative, of course, it's Sporting Kansas City. You know, that back line they have, man. I mean, Matt Beasler and Michael Parra, for me, the best center back combo this year in Major League Soccer, hands down. I would have said that Matt Hedges and Walker Zimmerman, they were giving them a good run earlier this year. I would have said it was 1 and 1A, but you know, Zimmerman got hurt. Hedges went off to the national team, and Zimmerman right now just isn't quite the same. So so it's relative. They had, you know, two good chances, maybe a couple other half chances, and that's what you're going to get at Kansas City. You got to put one of those away. It, you know, what happened earlier this year, they go into Kansas City, they get a 0-0 draw. That is not a bad result there. You know, Kansas City, again, it's a hard place this year especially to go get a point. The other day, earlier this year, they didn't create many opportunities, about the same. They didn't score any, but they didn't let any in on the other side. So it's a relative question. At Sporting Kansas City, that is enough. Other places, it may not be.
Is anybody hitting the panic button? Because I don't think Oscar Pereira ever does. But it is really a four games that are really uneventful when it comes to FC Dallas. And it's definitely a team that we certainly down here, or from my perspective, I just think has achieved wonderfully over the years, has achieved wonderfully with younger players, has really made some real inroads, maybe with less resources.
Yeah, for sure. But Glenn, I would say you're being kind to say uneventful, to call this four-game run for FC Dallas uneventful. Because, you know, I think if you're an FC Dallas supporter, it's very eventful, but in a pretty notorious way, you know, in a bad way. Because those two things I just said, you know, those things just can't continue. You can't give up easy goals on set pieces. You can't allow runners to go free. You can't, you know, miss all the opportunities. You can miss some of them, but you can't miss all. You can't have 28 shots against Colorado, as they did a couple of weeks ago. You know, eight shots on target and not make any of them. So, no, the answer is nobody's hitting the panic button, because that's not Oscar Pereira. One of the things I think he's done a really good job on is keeping the team on this really level keel. He doesn't want them, and he manages this real well, I think. He never wants these guys to get too high after wins. He never wants them to get too low. As he always says, we just keep going on the project. We just keep kind of turning the wheels. And so they're not hitting the panic button, but, you know, I think he'd be somewhat less than honest to say that, at least from the outside, that people aren't looking at this team and saying, you know what, you know, are they going to get out of it? Is Marlon Diaz going to get healthy? Are they going to get a little bit more production from, you know, somebody besides, you know, Maxi or Rudy? And, you know, Rudy's gone just a little bit cold. So not panic button time yet, but it probably ain't far.
Now, Mauro Diaz was rested. He's expected back for this one tomorrow night, right, Steve?
I don't really know that that's correct. It's a little bit of a hamstring injury that he's picked up, and he's questionable. And honestly, I don't know. I didn't know until, you know, game time last week that he'd picked up that little injury in practice. So I don't have any special information there, but gotcha. Officially he's questionable.
All right, let's talk about some of the attacking players. He's Steve Davis, color commentator for FC Dallas television broadcasts. He's a writer at 442, but, I mean, he goes back to the Dallas Morning News. I mean, this is a guy that's pioneered and blazed a soccer writing path here in the United States. Let's talk about Michael Barrios, Roland Lemah, Christian Coleman, and, of course, Maxi Arruti.
Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with Michael Barrios, because we always are concerned about him.
Yeah, Barrios is an interesting cat, isn't he? Because going into this year, one of the nicks against his game, one of the criticisms on his game is for all the speed, he really doesn't create enough. You know, he bothers defenses and he gets into some goal-scoring positions, and especially when Mauro Diaz is out there, Mauro Diaz can find him in dangerous spots. But his crossing, frankly, just wasn't very good. And the coaches worked with him in the offseason. They try to tell him, you're faster than everybody. You can take an extra second maybe, look up, find your target, you know, measure your cross. They really worked with him on that, and man, it paid off. I mean, look, he's up among the league leaders. He's got 10 assists, so he's really developed into a little different player. That said, he can still go a little hot and cold. And then on the other side, Roland Lemah, he came in. He, you know, like a lot of players, it took him a while to get it find his feet in Major League Soccer. Now the coaches worked with him, and they said, you know, you're out wide too much. And they really worked with him on getting into some interior spots, getting into better positions, just a little closer to goal. You know, they worked on his starting position a lot, got him closer to goal. And he started getting some, right? But then teams kind of figured that out and kind of shut him down in the transition, which was where he was getting a lot of his goals. So now, you know, those guys have to adjust their game again. You know, it's in a lot of ways a game of adjustments, right? You know, you adjust and they adjust, kind of like that in game, but it's also like that through a season, and you got to change things a little bit. And Mauro Diaz coming in and out of the lineup doesn't really help, because the team looks so different when they've got him at the 10 and the 4-2-3-1 versus when they're just in a 4-4-2. And
yeah, when he's not around, Steve, when Diaz isn't around, who's the main fulcrum when it comes to, you know, involving people, providing the defense, turning past? Who is that?
It's a great question, because they just don't have that guy. You know, when Roland Lemah is on his game, when he's confident, and the problem is you don't find this version of it very often. When he gets the ball and he goes and drives at players immediately, that will break. That tends to break down the defense enough, you know. But that doesn't happen. So now sometimes it can be Kellen Acosta, but he's a box to box guy, and he's still a young guy, so he's going to make a couple of good, you know, passes a game that open up a defense, but being a box to box guy, he's not Mauro Diaz. He's not a classic number 10. He's just going to spend the afternoon cutting open that defense. So they just don't have that guy. Now, if they get into the rhythm like they were earlier this year, without Mauro Diaz on the field, where they sit and they counter, and you know, you guys see a lot of that down there with Wilmer Cabrera, they can manufacture off that. But when teams sit back, you know, last week when Kansas City got the goal, and then they were able to take off that high pressure and just sit back, I mean, Dallas just has basically no way through. So you've hit upon one of the big problems right there.
Steve Davis joining us, 442 Magazine, also the color commentator for FC Dallas. This is ahead of the Dynamo against FC Dallas tomorrow. What before I let you go, Steve, a couple of talking points about the Houston Dynamo and why maybe FC Dallas is concerned about them.
You know, I always just defer to you on all the Houston Dynamo knowledge, but I really think right now, not to kind of, you know, try to dodge your question, I really think that FC Dallas is just worried about themselves right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're, you know, of course we know the Dynamo has, you know, certain things that they, you know, do well, and you know, certain things they may or may not do because, you know, guys like Cabezas are, you know, suspended here. Mm-hmm. I know what they're working on this week is just, we've got to clean up marking on set pieces. You know, we've got to do better in finishing our chances. Because, look, if they don't do that, it doesn't matter what Houston does. Houston's going to, yeah, you know, either find a goal and then beat them 1-0, or they're just like last time, it's going to be 0-0. And Houston, I think, it, you know, might be okay with that.
How was the team shape against Sporting Kansas City? Was that okay? I mean, other than the moments where they lost concentration, was the team shape, in your opinion, was it good enough on the road?
I think team shape against Sporting Kansas City was fine. It was fine against Colorado. Mm-hmm. Hence, 28 shots. That's a lot of shots. It's season high.
It is.
So, and by the way, Colorado didn't really do much to bother them on the other side. You know, Matt Hedges was good in that game. The defense looked pretty good. Shape is fine. You can't lose runners on set pieces. It's soccer 101. You can't. You have to do a little bit better. You have to be a little more clinical on the final pass and the shot in front of a goal. That's really it. Shape is fine. It's execution.
Got it. Steve, thank you so much for coming on, as always. Let's get you on again, and let's do an interview where we just talk issues in Major League Soccer, because we got a ton of them right now. As always,
I thank you.
And
let's get a beer sometime soon, if I can say it.
You got it, Steve. Done deal. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
You got it, Glenn.
All right, that's Steve Davis, 442 Magazine. Steve and I go way back to the Dallas Burn in 96 when he was covering the Dallas Burn for the Dallas Morning News. Has just had an outstanding career from a writing perspective, now a color analyst on the FC Dallas broadcast. As we wrap it up tonight, big thank you to Tyler Scott, producer T. Scott, for all his work here tonight. A reminder, Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook, Soccer Matters. Get over there. We want your opinion and the podcast of this show at podcastarena.com and on iTunes. For all you who listened in, called in tonight, thank you very much. And until next Wednesday night, we'll go back to Wednesday at 7 Central next week. Thank you for tuning in.
ESPN 97.5.